WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Ernest Gaines moved from Louisiana when he was 15, but when you read his novels, you can see he never completely left his childhood home. His stories, which include the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman and A Gathering of Old Men, takes place in and around a southern Cajun town he calls Bayonne. It's a setting not unlike the town where Gaines grew up. Although he has lived in California since the late 40s, he returns to his home state every year as a writer in residence at the University of Southwestern Louisiana. A Lesson Before Dying is Ernest Gaines' first novel in 10 years. It's about a young black man named Jefferson who is facing execution for shooting a white liquor store owner. It's also about his relationship with a black teacher who befriends him. The book opens with the murder and the trial. This is the closing argument which Jefferson's white defense attorney makes to the jury. Ernest Gaines reads,
"Gentlemen of the jury, look at him. Look at him. Look at this. Do you see a man sitting here? Do you see a man sitting here? I ask you, I implore, look carefully. Do you see a man sitting here? Look at the shape of this skull, this face as flat as the palm of my hand. Look deeply into those eyes. Do you see a modicum of intelligence? Do you see anyone here who could plan a murder, a robbery, can plan anything? A cornered animal to strike quickly out of fear, a trait inherited from his ancestors in the deepest jungle of black as Africa. Yes, yes, that he can do. But to plan, gentlemen of the jury. No, gentlemen, this skull here holds no plans. What you see here is a thing that acts on command, a thing to hold the handle of a plow, a thing to load your bales of cotton, a thing to dig your ditches, to chop your wood, to pull your corn. That is what you see here, but you do not see anything capable of planning a robbery or a murder. He does not even know the size of his clothes or his shoes. Ask him to name the months of the year. Ask him, does Christmas come before or after the 4th of July? Mention the names of Keats, of Byron, of Scott, and see whether the eyes will show one moment of recognition. Ask him to describe a rose, to quote one passage from the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. Gentlemen of the jury, this man planned a robbery? Oh, pardon me. Pardon me. I surely did not mean to insult your intelligence by saying man. Would you please forgive me for committing such an error?"
The story that you've written is set in the 1940s in Louisiana.
Right.
Did you feel like you were writing history, or did you feel like you were really writing about present-day racial conditions?
No. I set the story in the 40s because I went to use that little school, such as the one that I use here in the book, and such as the one that I attended as a child. And I also wanted to... use a period of time when blacks could only get a job as school teaching, professional blacks could only get jobs as school teaching in the South. And I want to use that kind of time because, you know, the protagonist here, the narrator here, wants to escape the South. So I had to use the period when period of that time. Another thing I want to use that particular period for was... at that time in the state of Louisiana, executions took place in the parish in which the crime was committed. And you had this this traveling electric chair. And, of course, you don't have that today. You have, it's quite different today.
Now, you grew up on River Lake Plantation, and this is in Louisiana.
Yes.
How long had your family worked this plantation?
We've been there about 5 generations, and I think my brother's children and would be the 6th generation. So we've been there, since just after the Civil War, I suppose.
So what, as a child, what did the plantation look like?
Well, there were you had a road, which we call the quarter. And you had houses, about 15 houses on either side of the road, built in the time of slavery, but had been improved to, they lifted up off the ground on blocks, and there were kitchen added and windows added. And You had 15, I'd say about 15 houses on either side. You had a big house at the front facing the river. And those were the, and then you had a church, which was the school drew in the, about 5.5 months out of the year, or 6 months out of the year was our school, and church on Sundays for the for our parents, our ancestors. Then you had the fields surrounding all of this.
How many acres?
Bordering all the, oh, I have no idea the acreage. You had many, many acres of sugar cane, cotton, corn, whatever, potatoes, onions, all kinds of things like that. And then you had the swamps, maybe 2 or 3 miles farther away from the fields. You had the swamps, and of course, we young kids, we went into the swamps. We went to the field very early. I went into the field when I was about 8 years old to pick cotton. And I was in the swamps when I was about 12 years old, and pulling the end of a saw in the swamps. So I got to know the plantation system very well.
So did you work a full day at the age of 8?
Oh, yeah, sure. You went into the fields when the people went in the morning. You came out in the evening, and there was no such thing as 8 hours. You went in early in the morning, and you came out late in the afternoon.
When you were 8 and you were, and you worked the fields, how much could you make in a day?
Oh, about 50 cents.
Was that considered a lot?
Well, I suppose it was. I suppose, you know, everything is relative, as
sure.
I said. You know, a lot of people were not making much more than that. I doubted that the adults were making more than maybe a dollar and a half or whatever amount of money they were making. I don't know exactly how much they were making at that time.
I read that your mother was 16 when you were born, and you're the oldest of 12 children.
Yes, I'm the oldest of 12, right.
She went back to work and worked the fields when you were just about a week old. Who took care of you?
My aunt did. I had I was raised by my aunt, Miss Augustine Jefferson, and she was crippled all of her life. She crawled over the floor as a child would have to do, as a 6-month-old child would crawl. But she did everything in the world for me and for my brothers and sister. You know, cooking the food, or washing the clothes, or patching the clothes, and even disciplining us. She, when we need discipline, I mean, you know, you had to break your own switch at that time, you know, and bring it to her, and you had to, you know, sort of kneel down and take your punishment because she could not, you know, go after you. So we did that. She also liked to put our hand into the earth. She, we had a little a garden beside the house, a vegetable garden beside the house, and she would. In the afternoon, after it got a little cool and the sun would begin to go down behind the trees, our pecan trees, she would crawl over the floor down the steps into the garden, and she had a little short-handled hoe in which she would, you know, work among the different vegetables, whether we had beans or sweet peas or tomatoes or cucumbers or whatever, okra, whatever we had. And she would do that.
Well, I want to talk some more, but we have to just take a very short break. And I'm speaking today on Fresh Air with Ernest Gaines. And he's written a number of books. The one I'm sure that many people have heard of, The Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman and A Gathering of Old Men. His latest book is a novel called A Lesson Before Dying. We'll be back after a very short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with novelist Ernest Gaines. You left Louisiana for California. Your mother and your stepfather were out there and wanted you to live with them. Were you eager to go, to leave Louisiana?
I think I was. In a way, I was. And then I was I sort of hated it, too, because I was leaving my aunt and I was leaving my brothers and sister and my friends. And but I knew that they wanted me to go because I could not further my education in that area where I was. There's no high school there, and we did not have any immediate kin that I could go to in the Baton Rouge or New Orleans. So I knew that, they wanted me to do it. And I always knew I wanted to, you know, get an education. I was very serious about that from a small child.
I read a story where your stepfather, I guess, was concerned about, and this is when you were in California, was concerned you were kind of hanging on the street corners, and he said, or sort of steered you toward the library. Had you ever been in a library before?
No. When I lived in Louisiana, I could not go to the library. The library was not for blacks in Louisiana. The library was for whites only in that part of Louisiana where I was. And the story about my stepfather, well, what my stepfather told me to do was to get off the block, because we lived in Vallejo, California, in this small naval town. And he said, you get off the block, you're going to catch a lot of, you're going to get into trouble, because there are a lot of sailors in this town, a lot of nightclubs and women and all this sort of thing. And he said, you know, stay off the corner. So it was then, that's how I ended up in the library. And I just started, there I started reading, and I just read and read and read, and I was looking for myself. I really was. I was looking for something about myself, something about my people. But this is, say, 1949, and there were no books in those libraries by and about blacks at that time. But I would just read. I would read everything I put my hand on.
What would you read?
Well, at that time, since I was looking for peasantry life, I would turn to anyone who wrote about peasantry life. For example, Steinbeck. I read Steinbeck, John Steinbeck, and I wrote Willa Cather. I read Willa Cather. Then I began to discover others, non-American writers, European writers, the great Russian writer Turgenev, and I didn't know how I stumbled on that, but the books were there, and Chekhov, and I began to, de Maupassant, and I began to just love literature, just love it. And still, I did not see my people. I could enjoy what they were doing, because they wrote about young men and young love, and they wrote about peasant life. But they were not writing about the blacks of Louisiana, and it was then that I tried to write a book.
So you wanted to write that story, the stories that you couldn't find in the library.
That's right, yeah. I was interviewed many years later after I'd written Miss Jane Pittman by an interviewer, and he asked me, what one book made you a writer that got you started? And I tried to think of the one book, and he said, maybe it was the one that was not there and that you wanted to put there. And I said, hey, that's as good an answer as I can come up with. And I did try to write when I was about 17 years old. I tried to write a novel, and I thought it was a novel. I didn't know a thing about typing, so I wrote it out in longhand, and then I got my mother to rent me a typewriter, and I typed with one finger. And I typed on both sides of the paper. Oh, by the way, I cut the papers in half because I thought that was book size, and I thought that's what you were supposed to do. And I typed on with one finger, and I typed on single lines and all that sort of thing. I made every error that anyone can make on a piece of paper. And after about 100 pages, 150 of those pages, I wrapped it up in some paper I found in the kitchen and tied it up with some strings I found in the kitchen. Sent to New York, and of course they sent it back to me, and I burned it. We had an incinerator in the backyard, and I burned it.
And how long until the next book?
Well, I really had to get down to my studying after that, and I had to, then I went into the Army. I came out of the Army. I enrolled at San Francisco State College to study creative writing. I spent 2 years there. Then I won a fellowship to Stanford University. And during that time, I was writing short stories. And an editor or agent or whoever, came from New York, I suppose. And he was saying that short stories were very hard to publish by an unknown writer. So that day, I just quit. I just said, well, from now on, I must write a novel. So I could not think of any other novel but the one I tried to write about 10 years before. And it took me, after I started writing, I think the next day on this novel, and it took me about 5 years to write it, between 59 and 64. It was published in 64.
And that was your first book published?
Catherine Carmier, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. And it was somewhat like the first thing I tried to write 10 years earlier. About a young man from California who goes back to the South, goes back to Louisiana, and to visit his aunt. But he's found that everything has changed. His whole life has changed. He's so different from everybody around him. And he falls in love with a beautiful girl, and, you know, it's a tragic story. So that's what I wrote.
Your books all take place in Louisiana, a place where you left when you were 15.
Mm-hmm.
Why do your novels take you back to the place you grew up?
Well, I think most writers write about their place that had the greatest impact on them, the impression on them as young people. Not only Ernie Gaines, but you'd find the same thing in the a writer, say, like James Joyce, or many of your Russian writers, or any writers, they write about the old home place, much more than they write about any other place.
Well, the Bayonne in your books is the point, is a coupe parish?
Well, Pointe-Coupe is the parish. Bayonne is the town within the parish. Bayonne would be the town seat. Bayonne is something like the small town of New Roads, which is the parish seat of Pointe-Coupe parish. And in my book, of course, I changed the names from changed the names around. For example, Pointe-Coupe parish is called St. Raphael parish. And because my stepfather was named Raphael, his maternal name, his mother's name, was Bayonne, and so I gave the town Bayonne. But I use that in throughout the book and throughout all of my books. I use my family names to name the parishes, the towns, the rivers, the roads, or whatever.
Does your family enjoy that? Do they look for their names in your books?
I don't think so.
See, I'm a river in this book, and
no, I don't think they do that. I don't know if they even read them.
No, really?
I hope so. Well, we play cards more than we read books or talk about books. We like to play whist, so we do more of that than talk about discussing books. They're very proud of it, of course, you know, and they have them around the place, all over the place. They tell their friends about it, but I never ask them what do they think of it.
Ernest Gaines' latest novel is called A Lesson Before Dying. This is Fresh Air.